Good morning. Nice to see everyone. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, but I still, every Sunday when I come, there's just this kind of little buzz, you know, this kind of quiet excitement that happens when people come together, and I will never get tired of that. Can everyone hear me okay if I talk in my quiet voice? Good. So this morning I'm going to do something that I haven't done for a little while. I'm going to tell you a story from my childhood. So please relax and settle in. I hope you enjoy it. It's called Across the Road. Excuse me. Let me get a sip of water here. On the first night at our new farm, my brother Jim and I played at hiding from cars. We would see a car's headlights off in the dark, a mile away easy, and hear its muffled, distant sound, and then we would watch as the lights slowly, slowly came closer, and then finally, as the car seemed to suddenly speed up and then roared by in a rush, we would fall yelling and screaming into the ditch. There was a hollow by the driveway next to a little steel culvert, and we'd press ourselves hard into it, and we had a big piece of latticed wood, probably from a packing crate, and we would pull that over us. When the car was safely passed, we'd remove the lattice, get up, and eagerly anticipate the next car, and we did that over and over again. Jim at this time was 5, and I was only 3, but I remember that night vividly, and I remember the thrill of it. This was all new to us, hiding from cars. At our old farm in Iowa, the one we'd left early in the morning, that very same day, we had lived far from any big road. Cars seldom went by, and when they did, it was with that friendly, slow, soft sound of tires on gravel. And if you took a look at the car, you almost always knew who was in it. Mom and Dad were inside looking over the new house as we were hiding from cars. This was new to them, too. My mom had lived on farms her whole life and was a private person. She said she'd never want to have a station wagon because it felt like you were riding in a bus and everyone could see what you were doing. And she said she could never live in town with people right next to you so they could even see in your windows and they knew all about your business all the time. In Iowa, where we had come from, she knew family and neighbors and some people in town, but she wasn't outgoing, and she wasn't one to seek people out who were different from the people she had always known. My dad had been in the Army during World War II and had been to Germany, and so he knew something of the world, but he was shy, and he, too, was not inclined to go out of his way to meet new people. And they both had a kind of independence and a kind of fierce pride even in their poverty. We never had any money. We couldn't afford a telephone or the nice Christmas gifts that we wanted or fancy 4th of July fireworks. I remember a sad day when my mom had to sell 4 antique pieces of furniture that she had had for years and had restored herself, a settee, a buffet, and a couple of other things, because apparently that was the only way we could make it through financially that year. But we did own land. We had bought this new place in North Dakota after my dad had had some arguments with his dad about contour plowing. My dad decided to strike out on his own, free of his dad, in a place where there were no contours at all, the perfectly flat Red River Valley. It was not a financially advantageous move. All the money was tied up in the land and repaying loans to the PCA, leaving none for us. But we never, ever accepted any kind of a handout from anyone. We would help out neighbors, and they would help us, but that was always a kind of a collective community fair trade. It wasn't charity. So we came from kind of a narrow world socially. So it must have seemed strange to my parents when they found that living next to a federal highway brought us into contact with what seemed like an endless succession of strangers. This was U.S. Highway 81, which was a two-lane highway that began in Fort Worth and ran up through Salina, Kansas, and Yankton, South Dakota, and past our place in the southeastern corner of North Dakota, and on up to Fargo and Grand Forks to the Canadian border, where it connected with another highway that ran up to Winnipeg. The strangeness of the highway wasn't just that you could feel the vibrations from the big semis going by, shaking the house slightly, even in the middle of the night, and it wasn't just that as you were drifting off to sleep at night, you could watch patches of light from the headlights slowly moving across the room. You got used to all of that, and you didn't even notice it after a bit. The strange thing was the people who would stop at the farm, people you didn't know, people you had never seen before. Many of them were welcome, like the Avon lady, who became a friend, and the guy who drove up from Texas with a load of oranges and grapefruit and sold us a case of them for a good price. Whenever we got a visitor, all three of us boys would run from wherever it was that we were playing, and we would stand there and watch the whole interaction between the stranger and one or both of our parents intently. This mute and intent presence must have seemed strange to the visitors. But for us, the visitors were a welcome diversion. You never knew who you might see. People in strange, broken-down cars, or sometimes people in really nice cars. People in trucks. People wearing suits sometimes. People really out of their element sometimes, not knowing what to expect from us or even how to talk to us. And sometimes it would be someone who could tell a good story or was really fun. But more often it was someone in distress. Sometimes in a blizzard, someone would run their car into the ditch, and we'd invite them in to warm up while Dad got his tractor and pulled them out. Sometimes they'd offer my dad $2 or $3 or $4. Sometimes they wouldn't. When they'd offer him money, he'd usually refuse it at least twice, because that's not why he was doing it. The most common thing was that someone would run out of gas. Except for the house across the road, which was sometimes vacant, and maybe didn't look like a house where you'd get much help, we were the only house directly next to the highway for about a 6-mile stretch of Highway 81, so they came to us. We bought our gas in bulk for about 16 cents a gallon, and if they were out of gas, we'd always give them some. Sometimes they'd pay for it, but often they'd say they didn't have any gas and they didn't have any money. So my mom would give them just enough gas to get into Dwight, which was a little town 1.5 miles away, which was not on the highway, but had a little gas station. So that was maybe a couple of inches of gas in the bottom of a coffee can. That's not much of a gift. And I look back and I think, that doesn't seem very generous. But then I remember that time when she sold those antiques, and I remember how they never could buy nice presents for us or for each other. Once a guy stopped in, and he wanted to sell us his commodities. That was when the government would distribute actual food in lieu of financial assistance, or maybe in addition to it. Things like grains and noodles that would come in brown paper wrappers. My folks told him they couldn't buy the commodities. And he asked, well, can you maybe then just help me out? And my mom said, no. We have to work for ours too, she said. And I remember how sad he looked. And I wondered if maybe they couldn't have come up with just a little money for him. He probably needed it for gas to get to a job somewhere. But I don't know. I was so little, I didn't understand people at all. Looking back, I think a few of these visitors, now and then, may have been a little scary. One time Dad was talking to a guy on the front porch where we had a chest-type freezer, and after the guy left, my dad said I was getting ready to bend him back over the freezer if I had to, and I was really shocked. I didn't even see that there was any tension there, and I had never thought of my dad as someone who would fight with someone. I understood that it was to protect us, but it was confusing. I think my parents did pretty well, overall, in encountering strangers, given their preference for privacy and independence. I think they treated people who came to the farm with respect, and they may have been weary, and they may have crossed into being judgmental sometimes. I'd hear the weariness in my mom's voice. We didn't have much money, but we did have a kind of privilege in that we had the stability of having land and an intact family and a way to make a living, and we always had enough food because we grew a lot of our own food. And maybe sometimes my folks would judge people who had never had that privilege by the standards that had come from their own privilege. But I think when each person drove in, they gave them a chance, and they didn't seem to judge them according to other people they had seen. They never became jaded, and they never taught us to be jaded. It's strange to remember, though, that despite all of these contacts with strangers, we never locked our doors when we went to town. We would only lock our doors if we were going to be gone overnight, and that very seldom happened, maybe twice a year. We left our keys in our cars, and we never had anything stolen, except one time someone siphoned some gas from my dad's combine out in the field and took his thermos. Just that one time. We had one really surprising encounter that turned out very well, and I think I've told this bit of the story here once before. One night, after we kids were in bed, there was a school bus that caught fire out on the highway. No one was hurt, fortunately. It was a bus taking a group of 30 or 40 girls back to the Wahpeton Indian School from a basketball game. Mom and Dad invited them in, and they waited in our living room and watched TV, and we slept through the whole thing. We missed it all. But after that, the folks at the school invited us there for a special event, and we went. And my parents, in turn, in what I think was kind of an uncharacteristic move, invited some of the girls who had been on that bus to come out to our place and visit on a couple of Saturdays. The girls read us stories. We liked it. This was one of those residential schools that have really become quite notorious, but I didn't understand anything about that. I don't know how much my parents understood either. What they saw was a chance to reach out to some kids who weren't with their families and give them a nice day with a family. There was another thing about our new farm that brought us into contact with strangers. That was the house across the road. We always just called it across the road, as in, hey, someone's moving in across the road. The house across the road was even closer to the highway than our house, and it must have really shook when the semis went by. It was kind of a forlorn house. It had once been part of a fully functioning farm, but that farm had over time been reduced to just three buildings: the house, a small garage that wasn't properly painted, and a cut-down barn, which had been turned into a machine shed. Some neighbors of ours, who were good friends, used the machine shed for farming the land. Sometimes they left the house vacant, and sometimes they rented it out. The first person I remember living in the house was Warren. He was a bachelor. My dad would frequently help him out. I'd hear Mom say, "Warren's missed the driveway again," and Dad would say, with a kind of bemused resignation, "I'll get the tractor." Warren, well, he drank a lot. That's what he was known for. And he'd drive home from the bar, and he'd make it all the way until, only a few feet from being safe at home, he'd miss the driveway and go into the ditch. A lot of people told stories and jokes about him, and us kids would join in on that, I guess. You don't really know what to think when you're a little kid. If grown-ups talk about him in this way, I guess that's what you do. But it's hard to reconcile the figure of fun with the reality of his life. We snuck into his house one time when he was gone, which of course we shouldn't have done, but we snuck in just to have a look, and it was really pretty bad, and it was hard to know what to think. Do you just dismiss this person? Was this all his fault? Then there was a couple with a baby who lived there for a while and really fixed up the place nice, and we became good friends. There was also a family that moved in, and the dad was not there because he was in prison. We never knew a family before who had someone in prison. There was another very young couple with a baby, and they gave that baby Kool-Aid instead of milk. And they didn't seem to have a clue as to how folks should take care of things. When they moved out, I think it was in the middle of the night to avoid paying rent, they left quite a lot of stuff. One thing they left was a big box of books. Our neighbors said I could take them. I could never afford to buy many books, and I was pretty excited, and I brought them home. And my mom said, Teddy, those books are not for children. And then there was Floyd, whom I did a talk about a couple of years back called Walking the Creek in Winter. We really loved that guy. He was divorced. He had a long period of staying sober while he was in that house. He taught Jim all about hunting and trapping, and he was always willing to spend time with us and show us things about animals and plants and car radios. And one day my dad found him in his car where he had run off the road on his way to Dwight. He had died pretty young. It's a hard thing for a young kid to go to a funeral. I still miss him. So, across the road, that's what we called it. Those people were different from us. Those people were just like us. We wanted to help them and be good neighbors. We were a little afraid of them. They could be scary. They could be a lot of fun. It was all confusing to a child. So, this is a Dharma talk. There's a quote on your program from Trust in Heart Mind by Sung Tsan from around the year 600. This is a poem that Tim and I recently talked about at Hokyoji. And the quote reads like this. The arising of other gives rise to a self. Giving rise to self generates others. Know these seeming two as facets of the one fundamental reality. In this emptiness, these two are really one, and each contains all phenomena. If not comparing, nor attached to refined and vulgar, you will not fall into judgment and opinion. Self and other is a great theme in Zen. Zen is all about interconnections. Our tendency to draw firm lines between self and other prevents us from seeing how all things and all people are interconnected. Zen ethics are all about acting in a way that respects interconnections. What I call othering is the drawing of false lines, which do not reflect reality, which are based on generalizations rather than particularities. Othering occurs when we try to exclude something or someone or some group of people from our world. If we name someone as other and cease to try to understand them, we have deliberately chosen to ignore part of reality. How did my parents do with this? As I said, I think they did pretty well. I saw the example they set of treating people with respect, and although they got frustrated sometimes, and they were protective when they needed to be, they didn't prejudge people. They taught us at a very young age to be anti-racist, and I know they had some blind spots, as everyone does, but their intention was good. I chose the title Across the Road because it emphasizes otherness. There was that broken white line in the center of Highway 81, and I ask, was it a dividing line or was it a connecting line? The thing that I haven't told you that I've been holding back is that we ourselves lived across the road for a time. Our new farmhouse did not have indoor plumbing. That may seem a little surprising, but this was 1957, and the guy who sold the farm to us had lived there alone, I think, for many years. So my dad had to install indoor plumbing before we could move in. An outhouse and a North Dakota winter is not a good combination. The house across the road had an indoor bathroom, and our neighbors let us live there for a couple of months. I suppose we paid some rent, while Dad got our house ready. I have only one memory of living in that house. My Uncle Leonard drove a semi and helped us move. When the semi was empty, he lifted our tricycles up into the trailer, which had the tarp removed and thus was open to the sky, and Jim and I rode our tricycles around and around inside that trailer. The next thing I remember is hiding from cars, which I think happened that same night as my folks took a look at the new place. So we ourselves had maybe joined that transient class for a bit, living in a rented space, and I wonder if that experience might have opened my parents up to being a little more sympathetic. I know that line in the middle of the road became more and more blurred with the passage of time. A lot of things happened to erode our sense of stability. Our barn was wrecked in a tornado, and we tore it down, and the blank space where the barn had been left the farmstead with a kind of hollow-in-the-middle look. When I was 14, the big change came. My parents called it quits, and we sold the farm. I don't know if that was the only way to survive financially, or if they just got tired of the struggle that comes with farming, but that's what they did. We had a big auction and we moved to town, even though my mom said we never would, and we had neighbors close by on either side and in back of us and across the street, and we had a big picture window, and we kept the drapes drawn. And looking back, it seems like maybe we moved into a kind of a permanent across-the-road status. My dad got retrained as a machinist, but couldn't get a machinist job, and he found himself on an assembly line, and we called it quits again, and we moved back to Iowa. That must have seemed kind of like a defeat for him. We lived in a rental house again for a little while. He ended up in another factory job. But Mom and Dad also began to be a lot more social and had a lot more fun. They changed in surprising ways. And during my 20s, I would end up seeking out the sort of people that we had met across the road and being that sort of person too, traveling around, doing construction work, hitchhiking. It's the poorest people who are most likely to give you a ride, and I found out that if you need $2, you're more likely to get it from someone who has $4 than from someone who has $400,000. I look back on those strangers, and I put together the clues, and I see them now, and instead of the wide-eyed curiosity and confusion that I experienced as a child, I see their suffering, and I see the richness of their lives and of their struggle, and I can't help but love them, all of them. The sad man who wanted to sell us his commodities, the young couple who didn't know anything yet, and Floyd and Warren, all of them. Our farmhouse is gone now, replaced by a new house, and the house across the road is gone completely. It's a field now. Highway 81 is even gone. Since they built I-29, they changed it to County Road 81, and it gets very little traffic. What remains is my memory of the succession of strangers. A few years ago, I had a vivid dream in which I was standing just outside the house across the road, and I found an opening into the earth, and I went into it, and went under the highway, and I found endless underground tunnels there in which I walked, and they were filled with a great variety of wondrous things. And I wondered about that dream, and I wondered why it was located at the house across the road, and I didn't understand it until I recalled it in preparing this talk. I think it was about the adventure of meeting that which appears to be the other, that which is new and is not well understood. It's about going toward what we think is the other and the wondrous things that we can find there. I'm pretty open to the world now, I think, and I've cultivated that. But I also know that part of me still is that three-year-old who is hiding from cars. Because my brother and I were processing some real fear that night. And I need to acknowledge the fear. But as I do so, I also want to remember the exhilaration we felt as we yelled in the dark. And I want to remember how much I've come to love people in all their great variety and how much they've loved me back. What we think of as the other is scary. What we think of as the other is magic. When we go toward the other dissolves. And that is our practice. So, thank you for listening. And if anyone has any kind of a comment about that or a question, I'd be happy to hear. And if not, that's okay too. Maggie.
That was a lovely experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me feel things differently.
Oh, good.
Because I've never had any experiences like that.
Mm.
Grew up in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Been there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot different in the city.
Yeah. It's also different. I was thinking it's also different if you're a woman versus a man.
Uh-huh.
Because I had my share of hitchhiking experiences.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I hitchhiked Australia, but part of it I'm like, oh, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about the otherness. Everybody was so different, like other, but one had to have certain judgments.
Yeah.
To survive.
Yeah.
It was a very dicey situation. So it's interesting to feel that context as well.
That's true. Yeah, for women, I think that aspect of self-protection is much stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I, didn't... intend to minimize that in any way in this story. Of course, we do reach out toward the other, but we use good sense when we do that, and there are times when we need to protect ourselves and be very aware of what the dangers are. So, thank you for that comment. Yes, Charlie.
Thank you for the talk. My experience could be somewhat similar.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit reversed. My folks lived in the city for quite some time. I moved onto the farm when I was 12 or 13. I thought, sitting there listening to it, I thought, nobody cares about what happened back then. I'm thinking I should write down some of that stuff. So, hear the story of this.
You should. I think you have a lot of interesting stories from what I've heard. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
It was really nice to hear, and I sort of had the experience where I always felt like the other, and never really fit in anywhere. And we moved every 2 years, so it's always the outside person trying to get into something.
Mm-hmm.
City Minneapolis, and then went to 1 year over to Roseville, which was very different back then, and then to Kenya and Madagascar for 2 years, to a missionary boarding school on the side of the Rift Valley in the middle of like Nowheresville, and then to Orange County, California,
mm-hmm.
LA, and then back to Minneapolis. You know, so it's a very like you become like nothing and everything.
Yeah.
Just like.
Yeah. There's the experience of being othered yourself. And I could have written a different story about that, because while we were thinking, well, we're sort of more stable and together than this group of people, there were other people looking at us and thinking that we were, you know, not such great people. Like when I started going to school in town, in a larger town, you know, people would really look down on farm kids, and especially farm kids who were really poor, and I was acutely aware of that. So that happens too. There's that other, there's another story to be written. Yeah.
It's a small part of your story, but I was kind of intrigued by the fact that your parents changed. They were into their quiet farm life, and then they moved to town, and you said they had fun.
They really...
Yeah,
they really opened up. It surprised me too. This was in the late 60s. They started being really social, and they started hanging around with like a lot of young people my age, and going to parties and things. And they really had some fun. They had a few years there that were really fun. But it was surprising. It was a pretty deep change. So in some ways, leaving the farm and maybe leaving that stability also freed them up. So that was pretty interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening. I very much enjoyed reading this. And now we can do our announcements.